Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here we go again then with another podcast. Welcome to Full Throttle from Eurosport. And as we move this week into September, we also move into a very busy time for the superbike racing community. The next 5 weekends back to back, we will be on Eurosport and the Eurosport app with all of the action from the Bennetts British Superbike Championship and indeed the Motul FIM Superbike World Championship, starting with this weekend. Snetterton for BSB and Magny-Cours for Worlds. Greg Haynes with you, and let's just go through a little bit of the news first of all before we get into this podcast. But so much coming up. We've got Mick Shanley joining us, crew chief for Luca Mayas at Pichetti Kawasaki in World Superbikes. Mick's going to be talking about their season so far, and also from a technical point of view, just why the World Superbike Championship is so close at the moment, with Jonathan Rea and Toprak Razgatlioglu level pegging at the top of the championship. We'll have an update on MotoGP from our very own James Tozend, who was there broadcasting over the weekend. So all of the latest from MotoGP. And we'll also catch up with BSB championship leader Jason O'Halloran from McCams Yamaha ahead of Snetterton. But first of all, the news, and we have to start with the best breaking news we've had for some time. And this was on Monday this week, that Brad Jones has actually left hospital. The full statement went out on the British Superbike website. Brad Jones, iForce, Lloyd and Jones BMW, who sustained injuries following an accident during the opening Bennetts British Superbike Championship race at Brands Hatch on Saturday the 24th of July, has now been discharged from King's College Hospital, London. Following detailed assessment by the medical team, he passed all markers required in order to be discharged. His recovery path, particularly with regards to neurological aspects, will be long, and he will continue to receive intensive neurological and occupational rehabilitation therapy from home with private care. On behalf of the family, Brad's father, Tim Jones, wishes to sincerely thank all of the medical staff, marshals, and all within the BSB community who have provided so much support. Further information will continue to be provided when available. So, a positive update there. Brad Jones out of hospital. Clearly, a long road to a full recovery ahead of him. But it is, I think, the best possible news we could hope for at this point in time. We send all our love from the Full Throttle team here at Eurosport to the whole of the Jones family, with Brad having been discharged from hospital. News from the World Superbike paddock. Unsurprising, but good to see that Michael Ruben Rinaldi has been retained by Aruba Ducati, of course, alongside Alvaro Bautista for 2022. Bautista making the move back from Honda to Ducati. Don't forget, Bradley Smith will also be with us on Eurosport this weekend. In a race situation, that is. He's doing a wild card in the Quattro Group British GP2 Championship at Snetterton. So watch out for Bradley Smith, the former MotoGP man, of course, on the Spirit Moto Corsa bike. He'll be there. That's going to be quite different for Bradley, I'm quite sure. And quick shout out as well to Jack Doohan, Mick Doohan's son. We mentioned him in the season earlier on in the year, the Trident driver in the Formula 3 Championship. We didn't get much racing at Spa for F1 over the weekend, but we did get, believe it or not, 3 races for Formula 3. They got lucky with their weather, although there were some pretty horrendous conditions at times. But Jack Doohan won 2 of his 3 races The young Australian now closing to, what is it as I work it out, 25 points. Just 25 points behind the Norwegian, Dennis Hauger, who leads that championship. So are we going to see Jack Doohan? Are we going to see a Doohan winning a title on four wheels this year? They've got three more races this weekend at Zandvoort and three scheduled at Circuit of the Americas. Hopefully that will happen later on in the year. So that's the news. Don't forget, free practice for World Superbike will be our first live action of the weekend. James Tozend and myself will be live in the commentary box for the Magny Cours first session from 9:25, 25 past 9 in the morning, UK time, on Friday. More from James Tozend later on in this show and from Jason O'Halloran as well. But let's just kick things off, first of all, with Mick Shanley from the Pichetti World Superbike team. Mick, first of all, how are you? Because you've not been at a track for a while. It's been a strange old time. Lucas broke his wrist, of course, back at Assen. So the team missed Most. And then you missed Navarra for a very different reason.
Good morning, Greg. It's, strange. I'm excited to get back to Magny Cours. Obviously, Lucas's home race. So it's going to be a big race meeting for us. But like you say, it's been a while since I've been at a race meeting. So yeah, looking forward to getting back to it.
Now, the reason, of course, is COVID. And by the time we were on air, James Tozend and myself, and I know you had to unfortunately listen to us all weekend, so that must have been a bit strange for you, but you were already COVID negative, weren't you, by then? But you had been COVID positive. Did you actually have COVID then?
Yeah. It was a little bit strange. We'd been away as a family just in the week before, and I felt, you know, basically all right. I had a little bit of a cold, but nothing that would normally set you back or stop you or anything. And it was only from a couple of comments from my wife when she noticed different smells, and I couldn't smell anything. So just as a precaution, when we got back, I took a lateral flow test, which came back positive. And I was like, no, I think it's just come up because I've got a bit of a cold, you know, there's no way I've got COVID. So yeah, I went and did the PCR test check, and that came back positive. So I mean, we worked out, you know, I probably had symptoms for maybe a week at that point. So I should have been clear by the time I had to go to Navarra. Obviously discussing with the team and Kawasaki, just wanted to be safe, because if I'd tested positive again by Wednesday, they were risking not having anybody there to undertake sort of my role. So made the decision altogether that they'd have somebody there to take my role, just in case, and for me to focus on being 100% clear and support as best as I could do from home.
And what was that like? Because you were literally watching the races on Eurosport, weren't you, with us, and listening to what we had to say about it. What was it like from that point of view? Did you actually notice things or learn things that you might not know when you're on the pit wall? But I guess it must be so frustrating to not actually be there.
Yeah, it's really strange, because you're a bit detached from things. You know what's going on to an extent, and obviously you're in control of a lot of the bike settings, but what's physically happening at that moment in time is difficult to understand unless you can tell that he's out on track with the live timing. So I had my three screens set up, one with Eurosport playing, one with live timing, and my data screen as well. So the team were emailing me data straight over into my Dropbox and picking that up.
Yeah, wow.
So we were trying to keep as live as possible, but you never know what's happening, you know, just at that time, or his first person account when he comes into the pit box. You're always getting things sort of secondhand. And but then on the other side, it was interesting to sort of watch the TV footage with commentary as well, because I don't normally do that until after the event. And because you don't know really what's going on, you're keeping an eye on live timing, but I'll probably watch more TV footage. And it was interesting to see just a few things with riding style and things that I noticed probably a little bit more than what I would do when I'm just purely focusing on sector times and pouring through data, because I've got, you know, the latest data right there and then in front of me.
So do you think there's an argument, jokes aside, for a team to actually employ somebody to sit at home and watch the races on the telly to maybe feed some of that info back on a regular basis?
I think it's something more, you know, like certainly with our team, Manuel, he'll be watching. And it's that thing as well where you have the spotters on the side of the track. There, it's that sort of thing that they pick up more on. So
yeah, yeah,
I think it's definitely valuable. It has its place for sure.
Well, Mick, as you know, the reason we're mostly chatting today is to just talk generally about the state of the championship, because it is official. It's never been this close at this point of the season. It is absolutely a dead heat. Level pegging between Raz Gatioglu and Ray. Reading's only 38 points behind. Three different manufacturers there at the top of the manufacturers' championship as well. Ducati leads Yamaha by 3 points and Kawasaki by 9 points. And I didn't think I'd be saying Kawasaki were third in the manufacturers' championship at this point. From a technical point of view, why do you reckon it is so close now? I guess we've got Ray with his team, Toprak with his, Reading with his for now. And they have been for a while, so there's consistency there. But I know Scott Smart and everyone at the FIM and Dorna have done a big job, haven't they, to get it as equal as possible. But what has made it so close?
Yeah, it's a real tough, exciting season. You know, the sort of depth of bikes that are out there now and the depth of riders, it's tough to get top 10 results. So, like you say, Scott and Dorna have been working really close, and in essence, you know, you can buy all the hardware. It has to be there, available by regulations. We're on a common ECU platform from the factory team to all the supported teams. All the homologated parts that you have, the factory team have to be available to all the other teams. And I think, you know, you're always going to get the advantage with the factory teams and things, but there's a wealth of knowledge coming from a lot of different parts now, which are all feeding into the factory team. And it's balanced really well. I think with the Ducati being a newer bike, the Yamaha's obviously progressed, and it took a bit of a step from 2020-21 when the newer model came. You know, Kawasaki, unfortunately, is maybe they've caught up to where the Kawasaki is at the minute, and Johnny, as you can see, is having to ride really, really hard to just try and make that deficit. For sure, we've got a bit of a speed deficit in a straight line, so it'll be something that focusing hard on to try and see what we can do to negate that disadvantage, really. But yeah, there's so many people there in the mix. The bikes are all pretty even, really, apart from top speed-wise. Everything's got its advantages, but it's great to see some fantastic racing, really.
And just going through the manufacturers almost one by one, you are obviously a Kawasaki man with the Pichetti team. I know the factory team were very upset about the fact they didn't get those extra revs this year. And as you just said, Mick, you can see the Kawasaki is down on top speed, isn't it? It's a pretty sizable gap. Do you think they should have had those extra revs this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to be biased. I think took a view of the sort of regulations with the homologation and made a production motorcycle that revved harder. So, yeah, obviously went through testing and winter testing with that RPM limit in mind, and different camshaft specification, different gearbox specification. And then when it came to the first round, we had to change on the Thursday before we went out on practice on Friday. So it was obviously a bit of a penalty at that time.
Really? So is that how late it was? I thought it was earlier. I thought they'd sort of known from the Barcelona test. So was it literally they got to Aragon and had to change things around at the last moment?
Yeah, that was it. We had we arrived in Aragon with 15,100 RPM spec engines, and then on Thursday changed to 14,600 spec engines.
Cool. So were you literally not informed until that moment, or what happened?
I don't know the full political ins and outs with everything. Obviously, there was discussions going on, for us going out on track, that was it. We were back to 14.6 from first practice on the Friday.
Wow. Okay, no wonder they were so upset about it then. I suppose on the other side, other manufacturers argue that it's always been a bit cheeky of Kawasaki to re-homologate the bike every year anyway. But then again, they're not. It's not illegal, is it? It's just a bit of a loophole in the regulations. They're going to try and speed it up as much as they can, and the organisers will try and peg them back again.
Yeah. You know, times have changed a little bit. People used to do it quite a lot. Obviously, Ducati in the past came out with a lot of different incarnations, you know, with the 916 and 926 and the SPS and SP. And there was a lot of different things happen like that in the past. But times changed. Before, you know, if you look like back in the early 2000s, you sort of got a decent model update after every 2 years, and then there was a full model revision every 4 years. But once the recession hit, I think all the manufacturers got together, and it's now a lot longer for you to get any major model revision. So these smaller updates that you can do to try to keep competitive are quite important now.
It's good though for the championship, isn't it? I think from a neutral point of view, that the regulations are stable and make it equal. And I know it's, okay, more spec parks and you're very limited now as to what you can do. But from a neutral point of view, it's working, isn't it? Because the racing is very, very good and the championship's really close.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's a big key factor in the results and the racing that we've got at the moment. We need to have, once you have stable regulations, you can kind of work towards them and get on a level. When regulations change quite regularly, then, you know, you'll always have the biggest budgets, which will be able to maybe invest more into finding the limits of those regulations quickly, or somebody will drop onto something quite quickly and they'll have a distinct advantage, and it'll take others time to catch up again. But having that stable regulation, you know, allows everybody to come to that level, and it's down to how hard you can work on the track when you arrive there at the circuit, find the best setting to get the best tire combination. And you can tell, you know, weather conditions are playing such a part for which bike's strong on which tire in which track temperature, and
yeah,
you can get a different result from one day to the next.
Yeah, that's changed the face of things, hasn't it, Mick? This X tyre, the SEX, once Bautista and Rinaldi started using it last year, it was sort of unheard of, wasn't it, at that point? No one even thought of the fact that you might be able to use the X tyre in the long races. But that has become a given now, hasn't it? It's really changed the face of the championship, actually.
Yeah, it's something that was less likely. We did it a couple of times in 2019.
Did you? Right.
I did with Loris Baz.
Right, so it perhaps wasn't Bautista and Ronaldo who tried it first. Maybe it was you.
I think, to be honest, it was one of those things where one or two people would try it if the conditions were right, but it was kind of a bit of a long shot and you had to be confident. I think, definitely, you know, Rinaldi made a big jump when he won at Aragon, you know, convincingly, and being the only person to run the X. And it's certainly a thing that we look for now. First, we need to understand if we've got a performance advantage from it, because Kawasaki sometimes works really well with it, sometimes not. So we try and work out if we've got an advantage with it. And then, you know, your next step is to find out what sort of durability you've got. And that's again dependent on track temperature. So you're always trying to find that window as to whether, one, it works, and at what temperature it works at, and then how long it's going to last. So it's definitely brought a new interesting point into the whole event, really.
And just to help us understand, Mick, there's two SCX tyres now, aren't there? You've got the standard one and then the 557, as it's known. And I'm sure JT and I will be talking about this again in the commentary over the weekend. If it's dry, of course, otherwise they won't be used at all. But what's the difference between the standard SCX and the 557? Because that's the one, the 557 is the one that works with the Kawasaki's, isn't it? The other one doesn't tend to work so well.
Yeah, it's the 557 is like the new development SCX, if you will. You know, if the 557 becomes kind of the preferred option for everybody. That'll then become the new standard SCX, which will be available for all Pirelli customers throughout the world. And this is the interesting thing that Pirelli will do, you know, to sort of advance their product. The stuff that we'll develop in World Championship is available for everybody kind of the year after. So it seems for us at the moment, with the 557, a little bit more stable. It's a little bit stiffer carcass, however it is constructed, but it just seems to give a little bit more stability under acceleration, which for the Kawasaki seems to work quite well. The other SCX has a little bit more edge grip, but yeah, stability under power isn't quite as good for us, but for other manufacturers, you know, it can be opposite. They prefer to have that extra edge grip, and the stability isn't so much an issue for them.
And Mick, what's your take on the Honda situation? I'm keen to know from a technical point of view. We've heard a lot that it might just be testing is so limited now with only 10 private days available. Practice time is very limited on race weekends as well. Some people have questioned the rider liner. We know that Bautista's off now to Ducati again, ironically. And Michael Rubinaldi's just been confirmed there as well, by the way, for next year, as we expected. But what do you make of the Honda thing? Because it has been a bit of a disappointment, hasn't it, to put it mildly? We didn't expect HRC to not even be on the podium so far this year. What is going on there?
Yeah, it's a really strange situation, because there's no doubt in the budget, the financial aspect that they've got, the technical ability. Obviously, there's a lot of Japanese involved in the project now, and a lot more HRC led than when it was with Tenkata or previously. So, yeah, it's strange. I don't know why. To me, it still looks like a little bit of a Bridgestone bike, kind of a Suzuka-developed sort of project. But that's me looking from the outside. It looks kind of quite long and low bike, which I think Pirelli doesn't really react to very well. Everybody else, other manufacturers, have kind of gone in a bit of a different direction. But it might just be visually when you look at it, and the bike's stunning. It looks like a MotoGP bike, you know, build quality and everything. It's disappointing not to have Honda at the front. It's good for us that they're kind of not there, obviously, me with my Kawasaki hat on. But for sure, I think if they can just strike on the right formula with that bike, it'll be incredible, because the engine is unbelievably fast. And if they can just strike on the right formula to make the bike work, I think it will be incredible.
Yeah, I hope for my sake they do as well, because I've been saying and writing all year now, and most of last year as well, Honda's coming, and they're still not quite there, are they? It just feels like there's just something hasn't clicked, has it yet? But I suppose
it
just shows
like
again.
All the ingredients are there, just need to mix it right.
Yeah, it just seems. I don't know. I suppose, what about the testing rules? What's your take on that? Is there enough testing at the moment? I suppose, you know, you don't want big manufacturers spending massive amounts of money and pulling further away from the private teams, do you? But it is quite limited testing now.
Yeah. This is the thing. It's difficult to strike a balance with it, because for sure, you know, teams like, well, factory Kawasaki team and Yamaha and certainly Honda, they'll want to go testing as much as possible. But that has a huge budget restraint. The half-day testing rule really is a bit silly, because once you've invested all the money in taking everybody to a circuit and the bikes and the staff and all the infrastructure, you've already spent the bulk of the money. So you may as well allow to test for a full day. It doesn't make any difference, really. So I think probably that side of things will get changed, which will ease things a little bit. But it's, people will say quite regularly, you know, if I have more testing than the privateer teams, I'll be able to catch up more and be on more of a level. But the thing is, it is very much budget related, and privateer teams can't afford to go and do all the testing that the factory teams do. It's a huge expense to ship everybody about around Europe, you know, logistically and accommodation wise and staff costs, and then the actual testing costs. So it is a big cost. It's difficult to balance. I think we've got quite a good sort of number of days really at the moment. 12 days is all right. And I think if we start to get too many more, then yeah, the season itself will become really busy. And budgets, it'll just separate things even further away from independent teams.
And that's the thing, isn't it? With the season starting so late this year, you know, we didn't start till the end of May, did we, in Aragon? Had it been unlimited testing, you would have had Kawasaki Racing Team and HRC out there all over the place, wouldn't you, with test riders and all sorts of testing going on, which is bad, I think, for the championship. It would just open up that void even further, wouldn't it? So from that point of view, I think it's worked well. And the other thing as well, Mick, of course, is COVID testing at the moment. You know, Paul Denning's talked about this a lot at Crescent this year. A ridiculous amount of money is being spent by teams on COVID testing for travelling away and then coming back into the UK in their case. I mean, it's a crazy situation, isn't it?
Yeah, that's been a real sort of cost for so many teams. I mean, me personally, obviously there hasn't been a lot of cheap, low-cost flights from the UK.
No, exactly.
With holiday restrictions and things especially, and I live up in the north, so a lot of your things that go from Stansted and that aren't, you know, quite as convenient. So a lot of my flights this year have been via KLM, but I think when I put my expenses in for the first half of the year, because I book all my European flights and all my PCR testing before I go away and then when I come home. But when I put my expenses in, my PCR testing requirement was 4 times the cost of my flights for this year.
Wow, that is absolutely ridiculous, isn't it? This isn't taken away from, you know, the safety we need regarding COVID, but in terms of cost, that is just astronomical, isn't it? That's crazy.
Yeah, for teams, it ends up being a huge cost. You know, I think, okay, things are relaxing a little bit now where double vaccination can get away with a little bit less testing, but certainly in the beginning of the year when I had to do sort of a test before I left and then a test when I was over there before I came back and then two when I came back, you were looking at £400 to £500 just in PCR tests on each trip, and when you've got a team of 20 or 30 people, those costs add up very, very quickly.
Yeah. Multiple thousands of pounds. It's crazy. Okay, in terms of the technical rules again, Mick, just before we sign off to go back to that, just for anyone who perhaps doesn't know, could you just explain to us what the approved parts rule is and the concession parts and the fact, you know, is it basically then that when a manufacturer has a new part, they have to make enough available for all of the teams to be able to use that if they can afford it and if they want it? That's basically it, isn't it?
Yeah, in essence, that's it. There is a price cap as well on all the homologation parts, which is pretty reasonable. And it makes sense, really, to go down that route. The reason being that when the cylinder head and camshafts and these things are developed for a specific engine tune, the engine torque models for the electronics are developed around that engine tune as well. So because you have the software and the electronic map available from the factory team, everything in essence should pretty much work together straight away. And then dependent on results and where positions are, then, you know, you may be allowed for concession points where as a manufacturer you're allowed to update one or two certain items during the course of the year if it falls in with where you are in the standings and your results, and then that allows you to make a little bit of an extra step to try and catch up.
And I also wanted to ask, how on earth, because you can't change gear ratios, can you? You have to set them at the start of the year, don't you, the actual ratios?
Yeah.
So how do you find a compromise then with that, not knowing what the full calendar is? Because we don't know for sure if Argentina's going to happen. It looks at the moment like it will. They're certainly going to try and get it underway with, I think, a couple of charter jets and keep all the paddock in one bubble. But we don't know if Indonesia's happening. I've heard, I don't know whether you've heard, Mick, but I've heard there could be a couple of rounds in Portimao if Argentina doesn't happen. They could do a back-to-back at Portimao. How do you plan the season and your gearing and your engine allocation and things like that when you actually don't know the full number of rounds or even, in some cases, where the rounds are going to be happening?
Yeah, it is a bit of a nightmare. I mean, obviously, the Kawasaki in its current guise has been around for quite a while now. So over the years, you understand which circuits you go to and kind of developed a gearbox around that and around the latest engine tune, which has been similar for us since certainly 2019. With the engine specification change that we tested over winter, we worked out a different gearbox configuration for the extra RPM. And a lot of it's kind of calculated and simulating things on data to where we think it's kind of a best guess estimate, really. And that's all you can do. It's certainly a compromise in some circuits, especially for us having such a low RPM level. We're only 14.6 with the Kawasaki. I think it's the lowest of everybody now. So it can be a real big compromise in some circuits. And we are always trying to find a little bit extra here and there. And maybe, you know, a tyre that comes allows us to carry a little bit more corner speed. So then we end up changing the overall ratio and we can find kind of different solutions. But yeah, it's always where you're just trying to pinch a tenth here and there and 1 or 2 kilometres an hour difference. But it's not easy. A lot of computer simulations, a lot of work and just trying to make that best guess, really, before you commit at the beginning of the season.
So I guess that's where experience comes to the fore as well in some ways and making the right predictions. But is there an argument, Mick, final question, to say that it's quite difficult in some ways to be a private team, one of the independent teams, with a Kawasaki, because you are in some ways penalised because Jonathan Rea is so successful and he's the runaway rider, or at least has been the last few years? Does it not make it even more difficult for the private teams? Because those RPM limits, after rounds 3, 6 and 9, you can have an increase, can't you, or a decrease, but it goes by manufacturer and not by team. So it almost guarantees that you're never going to get the increase, doesn't it, because of Jonathan Rea's success?
Yeah, that's it. It's sort of a double-edged sword, you know. It's so good to see Johnny competitive and at the front. But obviously then, to stop Johnny or any rider becoming a runaway sort of dominant rider, you don't, as a manufacturer, get those upgrades. But yeah, for a privateer team, it would definitely help just even close the gap from the independent teams behind. Just help to close that gap a little bit closer. And with the RPM, with the Kawasaki, to be honest, there's no horsepower advantage. I think, you know, you're looking at 1 or 2 horsepower. There was nothing really different. It just allowed us to get that compromise on the gearbox a little bit easier, where we could over rev in between 1 or 2 corners and maybe save a gear shift here and there. But yeah, it just changed things around a bit for us, really. Obviously, when you've got a little bit more top RPM available, it means you can gear the bike a little bit shorter, so you've got more acceleration off a turn. And but yeah, it'd be nice to have, and I think maybe it's something that they do look at in the future, where they allow or they have a slightly different banding for independent teams compared to the full factory teams. But you also have to be a little bit careful as well, because when you have an independent team that's running a full factory bike, it becomes a bit different.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? I suppose, in Scott Smart's defence, how do you define how independent an independent team bike is? You know, is Garrett Gerloff on the same bike as Toprak? Is Lucas on the same bike as Jonathan Rea? Is Chaz Davis on the same bike as Scott Redding? It's difficult to know, isn't it, from the outside?
Yeah. And certainly, you know, my experience in the past, I had that last year with Loris. Our specification, what we had was a little bit different to what Garrett and the factory team had. You know, Kawasaki's pretty close. But yeah, independent teams are always, it's not just the bike specification, the independent teams, resources wise and staff wise and everything else can be a little bit restricted. So it's something that could definitely help close that gap. But yeah, I certainly wouldn't want Scott's job in trying to manage all this.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they cope with the Supersport rules next year as well when all that changes. We'll be back with Mick in a moment. Many thanks to Mick Shanley for his insight on Full Throttle this week. Just a reminder that you can subscribe to the podcast on your favourite podcast supplier. And don't forget also that the first live action on Eurosport television and on the Eurosport app will be coming your way 9:25 on Friday morning UK time on Eurosport 2 and the Eurosport app. And that's free practice one for World Superbikes. But we've heard from a World Superbike person. Let's get a view now from a British Superbike man, and not just any British Superbike man, it's the current championship leader. I caught up with Jason O'Halloran ahead of Snetterton this weekend. So Jason, just before we started recording this, you were just telling me that it's been, what, nearly 3 years since you've been back to Australia. It's still not normal, this, is it?
Yeah, it's been a long old time since I've been back to Australia, and the end of 2018, after the 2018 season, we went back for the summer, and then yeah, we've not been back since. End of 2019, had all the bushfires, and we had a few family things over here with Rachel, and then yeah, the COVID situation come last year. So it's been a long time since I've been back, and yeah, really looking forward to getting back if we can at the end of this year, or at latest hopefully the start of next year.
Yeah, really strange situation, isn't it? But in BSB, at least on the track, it couldn't be much better for you, could it? I mean, BSB, let's be honest, is not designed to be dominated like this. You're 119 points ahead of Christian Iden and your teammate Tara McKenzie, who are tied for second. But let's just repeat that. 119 points. Are you surprised by the lead?
Yeah, to be honest, it's a tough one, because it's, when I look at the point system like that, I think, you know, we're 6 points away from being five races clear. You know, we should be enjoying it and cruising to the finish line. But you know, it sort of all starts again in a few rounds time. So we just have to keep focused and keep doing our thing. And you know, at the end of the day, we've built up that points lead from being consistent and consistently winning races. So as long as I continue with that form, then you know, the showdown shouldn't change anything from that side of things. You know, it's at the end of the day, some people will get rejuvenated. They'll think, oh, we've got a chance again, and they'll come back strong. But for me, it's just the same thing. You know, we've got to keep doing the same job every weekend, and if we do that, then you know, you'll be champion at the end of it.
Yeah, we're just looking at those podium points now. For example, let's just say Peter Hickman's on 16, you're on 56. So effectively, he's only 40 points behind you, isn't he, as opposed to the 137. Well, it's more, 142, and Bridewell's 137 behind. So actually, yeah, Bridewell's 40 behind, Hickman's 41 behind. So it's actually a lot closer than it looks on paper, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you have to look at the podium points, because that's the only points table that really matters. It brings everyone, you know, after a long, hard season of work, it brings everyone back into the game. And, you know, we have to be ready for that for the last three rounds, because, like I said, when, you know, if someone's 150 points behind you, they feel a bit deflated and they're a bit out of it. Whereas when you give them all their points back, it'll be like the start of the season again. So, you know, the first couple of races of the showdown, I'm sure, are going to be really tough. We're gonna have to be on top of our game to make sure we can perform and be at the top.
Yeah, and of course, the showdown came in following a year of dominance for Leon Kamiya on a Yamaha as well in 2009. So this justifies in many ways, doesn't it, why BSB brought the showdown in. Are you a fan of the showdown, Jace? Of course, we didn't have it last year, did we, because of the shortened season. Different look to the showdown this year. Eight riders instead of six. Top eight all given 1,000 points plus those podium points. So five for a win, three for second, one for third. I guess you're not a fan of it, are you, this year, bearing in mind your lead gets destroyed?
Yeah, it's definitely not a fan of it this year. it's a hard one because I understand that they're doing it to keep it exciting for the end of the year and keep the fans coming to the racetrack. But at the same time, for us as racers, this is our job, and there's a lot to get to the nitty gritty of it. There's a lot of money on the line between first, second, third. It changes a lot in the championship. Yeah. So it's a very high pressure situation, and it's a difficult thing to think about when you look at the how far ahead you are on normal points and you think that you've done a good job and then it starts again. So but we all know what it is when we sign up for it. We all know the crack has been around for a long time now. Personally, I looked at the championship last year in 2020 and I thought it was some of the best racing we'd ever had, and we went to the last round with five people that could still win it. So I don't think it's needed anymore. You look at it this year and you could probably say, yes, it is needed. But from my point, I wish it wasn't there.
Yeah, it's definitely a sort of, I'd say, 50-50 split, isn't it, on those who like it and those who don't, whether you talk to fans or people in the paddock itself. But it is what it is, I suppose. And like we say, at the moment, you're, 33 points, it would be, ahead of Christian Iden. People are saying, though, Jace, and in many ways unfairly, where the hell has Jason O'Halloran come from? But it's easy to forget in some ways that you were already runner-up to Josh Brooks last year in the weird COVID-hit season. Do you feel different, though, in some ways now? I remember we chatted in detail, didn't we, back in 2019 when you had the crash pre-season. I think this has been coming for quite a while, hasn't it? You knew you could do it, and now it's just all gone according to plan this year.
Yeah, absolutely. At the end of the day, the results from this year are rolling on from last year. We had a really strong year last year in 2020, built some really strong, solid foundations. It's really difficult when you're not on the inside of it to know all the ins and outs of it. But the start of last year, I had a bit of a difficult time in pre-season testing. Didn't go really how we wanted it to. There was a lot of change within my side of the team last year. And then just before we went racing, that all got settled. So it was really late in the day last year where that all came together. So with the people that I'm working with now, I only had a day or two last year before the start of the season. So we worked together last year. We carried that on to this year with all the same people. And it's just, we had a great pre-season. We did our work. We did long runs. We tested what we wanted to test. And then, the end result is what you see now. So it's, it's been common for a little while. Last year, I won races again, which was a big thing. We won three races last year, had 11 podiums out of 18 races. So it was a really, really strong season for us. And then we've just carried that on to this year. So it's, riding the same bike, working with the same team, working with the same people. There's a lot to be said for that. And, it's all paying off now.
I don't really think there's anyone, anything that can really be criticised in your season, is there? But is there anything from your point of view that you've not been happy with, or any area you think you could have improved in looking back? Because the results are very, very consistent.
Yeah, to be honest, there's a few little ones that are only critiquing myself. Like I crashed at Knockhill out of race two, I think it was. I was in sixth place, but I'd started on row four. Really, really tricky pace to pass. I just got through the group that I was with. I could see the front group, and I just tucked the front at turn three. So that was probably my own mistake, and being a little bit too gung-ho, ready to get to the front. Another mistake I made was that Brian Tatch, I crashed on the first lap of qualifying, had to start 18th, and I got back to 5th in the first race, so that potentially could have been a really strong result for us. And other than that, it's all been pretty good. We've either been winning or we've been on the podium, which is, you look at how many podiums I've had, how many wins I've had. If you want to be champion, that's what you have to do. You have to win the most races and have the most podiums. So it's been a strong season for us. I feel comfortable on the bike. I feel comfortable within myself. I know what I have to do. And I think one of the biggest things with bike racing is you have to figure out how to win. And once you figure out how to win, you're away. And I seem to be doing that quite well at the moment. And it's easy to talk about winning. It's not very easy to win, and it's the fine details that make that happen, and they're the bits that we're getting on top of at the moment.
You have made it look easy as well, haven't you, Jace? I know it's not, but I mean, just looking at the stats, we've had 18 races, you've won 9, a further 5 podiums. So what's that, 14? You've only missed the podium in 4 races. I mean, let's be honest, BSB is not designed for that to happen. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think the best thing about that this year is that BSB, we race at so many different circuits with so many, they've all got a different character to them. Some are fast and flowing, some are stop start, some are up and down, and they're so different. There's nothing that's the same. So to be able to be that consistent on all them different tracks, it means we're doing something right. It means the bike's working really well. It means I can do my thing. And it's a package at the minute which we can win on, which is fantastic. But it's a difficult, really, really difficult thing to do in BSB. And you always have different people that have their really strong tracks because it suits their style or it suits their bike. So to be able to be constantly one of them guys in the top 3 every single weekend, no matter where we go, that's a quite rewarding thing for us at the moment. And we're doing something right.
And of course, going into Snetterton now this weekend and then Silverstone, I guess Silverstone, you and Taz are particularly confident, aren't you? Because we know how well the R1 goes around there. But there's going to be a great contest, isn't there? People like Glenn Irwin, Lee Jackson, they're desperately trying to hold on to their top 8 places. Brad Ray, Ryan Vickers, Skinner, people like that. Josh Brooks as well, of course. That shouldn't go unnoticed. Fighting to get through. How do you approach these races now? Because for you, a fourth position's almost, I'm not going to say useless, but you need podium points, don't you? You know you're in the showdown, so it's those top 3s that matter.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think, we've got Snetterton next, which is probably going to be a little bit of a harder round for us. The Ducatis go really well there. The Hondas go well there with the 2 big long straights. We're going to have to be on our A game this weekend if we want to be on the podium. But Silverstone, the last round before the showdown, we know how well the Yamaha works there. Both myself and Taz are strong there. So looking forward to that round. And it's a tricky one at the moment. We just have to assess as we go, but I definitely need to be on the podium to be scoring them podium points, but we also need to make sure that we're physically ready for the showdown, so we don't need to be doing anything silly either. So it's it's take it as it comes and attack the situations when they're thrown at us. But the next 2 rounds for sure are going to be a bit aggro. Like you say, there's a lot of people trying to still make that top 8. So they've all got a lot to gain and not a lot to lose. We just have to keep doing our thing. And, if we can do our thing right, I'm sure we can win some more races before the showdown starts and then, get ready for the business end of the year, really.
Is there any conversations being had within your team? Because obviously yourself and Taz as a team are highest up in the championship. Is it just, go for it race by race? Is there any championship chat, as it were, in that team?
Yeah, just go for it race by race. And we're both within a shout of it, and we just have to race for ourselves, and the last 3 rounds, obviously, I'm sure it'll be assessed as we go on. And I'm sure Taz is going to be one of my main championship rivals, so we'll be racing hard against each other, and hopefully we can do a really good job for the team. And ideally, we finish first and second in the championship. It'd be amazing for McCams Yamaha, we'll just have to see how it pans out and do the best job we can, and hopefully we're the guy at the end with the championship trophy.
And Jason, I've got to ask, because it's a strange situation this year. We've all been trying to get our heads around it. What have you made of the situation with Josh Brooks and the fact it has been a bit of a struggle? It's getting better now, isn't it? But it's been strange to see a reigning champion struggling as he has this year, hasn't it?
Yeah, I don't think anyone expected it. No. If you look at the pre-season videos, everyone tipped Josh to be the strongest guy in the championship, as you would being the reigning champion.
Yeah, for sure.
And you look at his time in BSB the last 10 years, he's never had a season like he's having now. He's always been one of the top championship contenders. But motorbike racing changes, and if you get something that's not quite right or you're not quite happy with it, in the championship they're in, with it being so competitive, you slip backwards and you keep slipping backwards. So it's I personally hope that he gets back up the front and challenging for wins and podiums, because for me, to win a championship, I want to win it against the absolute best guys there, and him being the reigning champion, I want to beat him when he's at his best. So, I hope he gets it together the next few rounds, makes the showdown, and then we can have a good fight for it at the end. But, you know, I've not spoken to him, so I don't know what the issues have been, or you only hear things through the paddock. But hopefully they get on top of it and back being competitive soon.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? There's still so many opinions about what could, should, has happened there or whatever, but I suppose only Josh and the team know for sure. But Jace, just to conclude, how much would it mean to you to win this championship this year? We know you're certainly deserving of it. You certainly are more than capable of doing it, as we've seen so far, but what would that mean to you?
Yeah, it'd be everything. It would be a small justification for the many years of hard work and sacrifice, you know, moving over here from Australia, and especially these last couple of years, we've not been able to get home and, missing out on a lot of family time back there. Obviously been through many things in the BSB career with coming back from injuries and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, to win a championship would be sort of just a bit of a small bit of reward for all the hard years of work. So, it's something that I've wanted to do for a very long time. British champions been the top of my list of that's been my main target, my main goal. And if we can achieve that, that'll be a really satisfying thing at the end of the year.
Well, Jace, good luck with Snetterton this weekend. I'm sure we'll speak again towards the end of the season, but good luck with it. And go for those podium points.
Cheers, guys. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much to Jason again for that one. Podium points, podium points, podium points then is the name of the day. You've got to be in that top three to score podium points. Remember, the showdown this year is 8 riders, as we said. They'll all be given 1,000 points, but we have 2 more rounds before then. Snetterton this weekend and then Silverstone on the national circuit there. And the podium points are accrued in terms of 5 for a race win, 3 for second and 1 for third. So when they get to the showdown, they'll all be given that top 8, 1,000 points plus the penalty points they have managed so far. So it is by no means won yet for Jason O'Halloran. Okay, good luck to Jace and the other BSB riders at Snetterton this weekend. All of the live coverage here on Eurosport. But now let's get back to Mick Shanley to talk about Magna-Cours World Superbikes and some more of those technical aspects that have made the championship so close this year. This is the final thing now, Mick, I promise. Magna-Cours, it's a great Jonathan Rea track. He's had, I think it's his 4th best track in terms of wins, but Toprak had some brilliant races there in the past with those 2 first wins he had. It's his favourite track. Ducati won the last race, though, there with Scott Redding last year. So I really don't know who we should be putting our money on for Magna-Cours. Who should it lend itself towards?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Magna-Cours is... I really enjoy it, to be honest.
Yeah, but me too, actually.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to get. The weather can be... Yeah, typically British. I think last year every session was wet. But yeah, I mean, you could be there and it could be sort of 30 degrees sunshine or 30 degrees sunshine one day and then rain the next. It's such a mixed bag. The surface now is pretty good. It was grippy in the wet. Before it was used to be a real ice rink. Circuit's got quite a lot of character, and if you like the track, you can go fast there, and you see that with some riders. Hopefully we can press some Lucas Mahias home advantage and get some strong results there.
Yeah, because he's going well, isn't he? And I think Lucas sometimes is a confusing character from the outside, in the sense that people think he's a very hard-nosed Frenchman, and he is on the track, but he's a big teddy bear, isn't he, Lucas? He's one of the nicest guys in the paddock, I'd say.
He's a great guy. He's a great guy. He just wants to be good so much. He puts so much pressure on himself. That French passion in there, and just need to try and control and steer it a little bit at times. But I really enjoy working with him. He's a real talent. And I think once he just figures out one or two small things with the bike and his riding, then he'll make a good step forward again. But yeah, potential's definitely there.
Yeah, exciting. Who knows what he might be able to do, especially if the weather's mixed. But even if it's not, I think it could be a decent weekend. And of course, with Mick Shanley back in the garage, you're going to be on the podium in all three races, surely?
It'd be nice. I'm just sat in my office doing my final preparation things before I get ready to fly out tomorrow. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Mick, thanks very much. Good luck with all your COVID testing and flights and travel locator forms and all the rest of the hassle we're having to go through at the moment. And have a good MagnaCore weekend.
Yeah, no trouble. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks very much indeed then to Mick Shanley and Jason O'Halloran before him. Don't forget, we will be live for Free Practice 1, 25 past 9, James Tozend and myself, MagnaCore, this weekend. And that's Friday, 25 past 9 in the morning. However, James was also busy last weekend. He was at Silverstone with ITV, broadcasting on the British MotoGP. Pretty interesting race weekend. Let's get JT's thoughts. James, you were there. You were on the ground. You were broadcasting. You were doing your punditry. What did you make of Silverstone 2021?
Hey, Greg. Yeah, I was at Silverstone. It was a great weekend, actually. Just broadcasting on the main event, the Premier Class with MotoGP. And it was a bit of a one-horse race, unfortunately, for the viewers. But it was definitely an exhibition for Fabio Quartararo. He was just fabulous the whole weekend. Obviously, qualifying on pole position, fastest lap. I think he was something like over 10 seconds quicker than the 2019 race time. So the pace was unbelievable. I think he's extending his lead to 65 points in the lead. And you'd have to say that that's one hand on the trophy for the young Frenchman. He's been outstanding, hasn't he, since he joined the factory team. It was lovely to see Aleix Espargaró having his very first podium on the Aprilia. Since it was 21 years ago since Aprilia was on the podium with Jeremy Williams, and that, in fact, it was Valentino Rossi's maiden victory in the 500 class at Donington, and I think Kenny Roberts Jr. was second. So I'm going back, so I'm trying to get my memory into gear. But incredible how long it's been for Aprilia to get their podium. So much deserves. They've really come on strong, haven't they, this year. And Alex Rins, back to form. He's had a shocking time of it, really, with his own mistakes, really, with crashing quite a lot. I think a lot of it is trying to keep up with his young world champion teammate, who's been outstanding again on the Suzuki, especially in race format. Me had a problem with his tyres delaminating after 9 laps. I saw his chief engineer, Frankie Carcetti, in the paddock, and they'd done race distance on the tyres, on that set of tyres, over the weekend, and it was fine. And he looked so strong at the beginning of the race. But unfortunately, after 9 laps, they both delaminated, front and rear. I think Pecco Bagnaia had the similar problem. So that was even better for Fabio Quartararo. Second, well, they were joint second, I think, weren't they? Mir and Bagnaia going into that weekend. And for both of them to finish, you know, nearly, I think Bagnaia was outside the points and Mir was down 14th or something. So it was a dream. All the stars aligned for Fabio. So, but yeah, as always, the British fans were amazing. They gave Valentino Rossi an amazing send-off for his last race in the UK. They should have been very proud of themselves, and I'm sure Valentino Rossi felt every bit of love for him. 25-year career. And it was nice to be there to see it, because I was at Donington in 2000 when I saw that victory for him, and I was there for his last one. So very, very proud of Valentino. Many, many thanks, obviously, from everybody in the industry of how much he's done for racing. And look forward to being back in the seat with you this Friday for MagnaCore. Looking forward to it. Brings back many, many fond memories for me, obviously, winning both my two world championships there. So looking forward to seeing you this weekend, mate. And yeah, see you Thursday evening, possibly. Ta-da.
Well, there you go. James Tozend, 16-time World Superbike winner, 61-time World Superbike podium finisher, 2-time world champion, and top reporter as well. Thank you very much, JT. We will be live then, 25 past 9 in the morning, UK time, Eurosport 2 and the Eurosport app. Many thanks from myself, Greg Haynes. We'll be looking forward to World Superbikes. We've got MagnaCore for the Worlds, and we've got Snetterton for BSB, and every single one of the support races from Snetterton will be live and exclusive on the Eurosport app, or you can follow our continued coverage, of course, on the main channel itself. Right, we'll see you over the race weekend. It's getting pretty crucial now then. in the Superbike Championships. What's going to happen? Jason O'Halloran looking for podium points. The likes of Josh Brooks, the reigning champion, looking to get into the showdown. Who would have thought we'd be saying that? That's going to be a very hard-fought contest as well, with just two rounds to go before the showdown, starting with Snetterton this weekend. And in World Superbikes, a very busy time coming up. We've got Magny-Cours this weekend. Then they've got a weekend off when BSB goes straight to Silverstone. So they're back-to-back. And then three in a row for World Superbikes. There's a lot of racing now coming up before the end of this season. Championships to be won and lost on Eurosport. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I'll be back from the commentary box next week. I'll be recording that one with James Tozend as we go off air on Sunday. But for now, thanks for listening to Full Throttle. Please subscribe if you can. Thanks for all your support so far across the season. And we'll chat with you from Free Practice 1, Magny-Cours, 9:25 on Friday. We'll see you then.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.